Hey, Drew.
Hey, John.
Hey. So I got this DVD, and I can't figure out why, but they gave me two of them.
That would probably be the special features disc.
Wait, we better talk about this.
Yeah.
Listening to the Hourcut,
our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
So, this one day, I'm a kid, and I'm at the video store. And I'm looking in the sci-fi section, now, and I'm looking at all these movies. This is back in the heyday of VHS cassettes.
Yep.
Right? And
glorious time.
Glorious, glorious days.
We're already back. It didn't take us long to get to go back to that time.
Back to the era. So I'm looking at the shelves, and I see this tape on the shelf. And it says Star Wars. And I'm like, oh, it's Star Wars.
Oh!
Wait a minute.
I don't think you sounded like that, though.
How do you... You're right. There's another Star Wars movie!
Oh.
But it wasn't another Star Wars movie.
Not as you understood it.
No, it wasn't. It was a Star Wars behind-the-scenes special feature. Cassette.
Just the one.
One special feature. With one special feature on it.
And I bet it was a good one.
It was a great one. It was called From Star Wars to Jedi.
I love it.
Yeah. And it was a little retrospective look back.
Spanned all three.
All three. Of the making of the movies. It was an entire cassette. Which, up until this point, my understanding of the cassette was you put one movie on one cassette.
That's all you get.
And that was it.
There might be some trailers.
Right. Well, yeah.
That but, immediately become irrelevant once you've bought that.
Yeah. Coming within summer 1983.
Within a month. It's no longer relevant.
Yes. But this is timeless. Because this is an entire product.
Feature length?
Feature, well, it wasn't quite feature length.
Special feature
length.
That's
the thing. It was like maybe 45 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was an entire, somebody thought there is an audience out there for stuff related to the making of this series of movies that is not the final product.
Right. And they were right.
I rented that cassette like 60 times to the point where I like knew like, I memorized...
You knew the creases in the film tape.
I did. I could recite, along with him, the words of the little person who operated the tail in Jabba the Hutt. He's like, Jabba likes... Sometimes when he's relaxed, he's just kind of backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And then when he gets excited, then we get really worked up and we move it up and down and all right and left and up and down.
When you watch Return of the Jedi, do you picture that man now in the
Jabba
scenes?
That's the
funny
thing. I don't.
Wow.
I don't. But I love, like, whenever I compare every behind-the-scenes featurette related to like special effects. Yeah. I hold it against that one.
Does
this take me inside Jabba's tail, or does it not? That's the quality of a good behind-the-scenes.
I just realized what you said, and it's somewhat disturbing. Let me pull you back a bit.
Yeah.
All right. Don't get too deep yet.
Let's pull it back.
Okay, so we're talking mainly movies. With special features and with an understanding that there's other avenues through which one could explore special features. But
absolutely.
For us and for today, we're going to stick in the sort of movie area, right? And television.
Right. Sure.
Television.
I think the visual media.
Where you can see with your eyes.
Things that you can see with your eyes.
These. Yep.
video cassettes.
Yep. I see music.
Oh, you could see books with my eyes. You could see music with your eyes.
Oh, special features in books. Okay, well, let's. Maybe we can get to that. I think it might be fun to explore what would that be like. But, especially with the digital age now, big deal.
Ding, ding.
But let's talk about special features nowadays. These are the. It's the extra content that comes with your DVD.
It's the bonus.
The bonus content. And it's, well, what is that? You know, what do they mean by that bonus? Is that to say that, you know, you're lucky to have it?
Yeah.
Is there an expectation now? I think at this point, if you don't have bonus content, then...
Why bother?
Yeah.
Why bother? It wasn't always that way.
You know what it to me says that the... production company itself has no interest in the movie if they're not stacking some features in there.
It's like, yeah, they're not very committed.
Yeah, they just want to
committed to this relationship.
Get it out of there.
Yeah,
get this DVD out and shut up.
They only
want to
be
back
involved
to work
with us when it's convenient for them.
Right.
Yeah, they're not willing to go the extra mile.
So special features encompassing those things that are extra or bonus on a DVD,
supplementary
video cassette. Laser disc.
Oh, he's invoked the mighty laser disc.
Blu-ray, huh?
Yeah.
So take us back. What was the first? Where do you think we started?
I don't know, because you could argue that bonus content goes all the way back to, like, you know, probably the
Egyptians.
As soon as the Egyptians,
ancient Egypt,
right? Yeah, the Knights Templar.
So, maybe not that far back.
Okay, maybe not that
far
back.
That would be... Well, yeah.
Well,
so, what about... I would think that once you started to have... The earliest special feature must be a making of. A behind the scenes, right?
I don't know.
What would it be?
Because if you define it as just a bonus, a supplement, something to enhance your...
Viewing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you could argue that, like, as early as the, like, 30s, like, movie exhibitors were supplying bonus content. I mean,
like
the second, when they would you would have a double feature.
Yeah.
The second feature is, like, a bonus. It's to get you in there to be like, well, I could do something else, but if I go see this movie, I get to see a second movie for the same price.
See, I don't know if I agree with that.
No.
Well, I mean, that's like saying, so that would mean that those value packs that you can get at stores where you get, like...
that's exactly what it is.
Where you get, like, Under Siege packaged with Under Siege 2.
Howard the Duck.
Or Howard the Duck, you know? The action pack.
Sure.
Is that a special
feature? I got a good one for you. I got a good one. Yeah, Commando and RoboCop.
I'd pick that up if I saw it, but
yeah, see,
I don't know if that's a special feature as much as it is a deal. 2 for 1.
Right, but I think it still qualifies. Well, let me go a different route.
All right.
Let me say, what about if you go to the theater, it's 1942, you're...
Putting myself there.
Yeah, you're there, you're...
Yep.
Man, you really want to support the boys over there. Support your troops.
Why am I not over there?
You're too young to go over there.
Okay.
It's 1942. You're like a zygote, dude.
Yeah.
So you want to...
I'm a zygote.
You're a zygote.
Not even that.
You're a popcorn-eating zygote.
Ooh.
You go to the movies, and you are treated to not just a movie.
Yeah.
You get a newsreel.
Right.
You get a cartoon.
Yes.
And this is, keep in mind, this is like cartoons like the Looney Tunes and the old, like, Mickey Mouse shorts. Those are sort of disposable now. I mean, nobody really, like, you get them on YouTube and that's it. But back then, you didn't have any way of seeing those except in a theater.
I'll agree with this. Because those are little, you know, short kind of... little bits, you know, to keep you in the theater until the movie starts, right?
Yeah.
And it was the only source of that thing.
Right.
And so I'll I'll agree with you there.
All right.
But a whole other feature that is really completely unrelated,
mm-hmm.
to me, does not constitute a special feature.
All right.
That's my opinion.
That's fair. I mean,
so I still think that, well, the earliest example recognizable by us, right,
mm-hmm.
modern culture, as a special feature, I would think would be a behind the scenes or making of.
Probably.
And I wonder when that would have.
That was? Oh, man, I don't know. I recall seeing something like for, I don't know, Cleopatra, when that came out, mm-hmm. like there was, you know, because it was any instance where the making of the movie was as
notorious,
rife
or famous,
consumption by the public.
Yeah.
You know, if there was any element of gossip promotional, to it.
If it was promotion.
Yeah. If it could be promoted via another means, then mm-hmm. It would be. And so that's one, you know, where they were talking about, we've got a billion people and they're all dressed in togas and they're all
sun. Yeah.
We've painted these sets with the blood of jackals.
Well, okay. Mm-hmm. Here's the next question.
Yeah.
Often, one of the things that's packaged as a special feature now is the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
The trailers for the movie.
Oh, man, what a burn. When you go to the special features menu and it's like, trailers.
Trailers of the movie you just watched. But does that count?
I think it counts. Well, and
because if it does,
you could
then
argue
the first trailer would be.
That's true.
And sort of like you said, it seemed like back in the old days, old Hollywood, in the trailers, not only, you know, the trailer was a different beast because it had a sort of narrator oftentimes.
Mm-hmm. Frequently.
And like sort of telling you what's so great about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it would say things like 100, you know, like you said, 100.
Yeah. A cast of thousands.
Yeah. See, 1,000 Indians roam across the plain or something, you know?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so like the description of what it took to make a film could be part of the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Marvel at Kong, right?
Like,
glorious special effects.
Yeah, exactly. Years in the making.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And that even goes back to take it sort of back to modern day. I think a trailer can be a special feature
mm-hmm.
if it has any special intent behind it. If it's created with a specific purpose beyond just being on a disc or being played in a theater.
Right.
And by that I mean, so a good example of that is the trailer for Psycho, the original Psycho. It features no footage from the movie. Absolutely none. It's completely its own. It's like a short film.
Uh-huh.
It's Alfred Hitchcock walking around the set and talking about in very loose terms.
Right.
You know, he's like, something happened in here. Mm.
Yeah.
It's a terrible Hitchcock.
It was good.
He leads you through this set and he introduces all of these elements to you just to, as kind of a teaser.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually talk about them in great length, but it's a completely separate thing,
right?
You know, and he never intended any of that, obviously, to be in the movie.
Yeah.
So I would consider that, like, that kind Absolutely. Of trailer a special feature.
Good afternoon. Here we have a quiet little motel tucked away off the main highway. And as you see, perfectly harmless looking. When in fact, it has now become known as the scene of the crime. This motel also has, as an adjunct, an old house, which is, if I may say so, a little more sinister looking, less innocent than the motel itself. And in this house, the most dire, horrible events took place. I think we can go inside because the place is up for sale. Although I don't know who's going to buy it now.
So yeah, I think like it's a bonus. It's a special feature. There are two ways to define that. You could say it's a special feature, anything that's a supplement to the actual movie. Or you could go the extra mile and say it's a special feature when it has a, there's a purpose behind it existing. Yeah.
There was a time when special features were becoming a thing, right? Maybe this is around the Laserdisc era or even cassette when...
Occasionally, yeah.
But maybe not, actually not cassette. So, because there, I think, and this is what I think you're starting to get into, there's the special feature that was never intended to be seen mm-hmm. by anyone, by a commercial audience. Mm-hmm. And then there's the special feature that is very much intended to be seen mm-hmm. by the commercial audience, right? Sure. So,
there's stuff that's created for, yeah, for something other than putting on,
right,
packaging with the movie. It has a something else, like some other purpose.
Outtake yeah. reels, I think, were originally just for the cast and crew, you know, right. as a thing to show at a wrap party or at yeah. some kind of gathering, and weren't necessarily intended for a commercial audience. But eventually now it's a very people love to see that stuff.
Now they even make them up.
Yeah, they make them up. They put them in the credits.
Yeah,
half the time.
Yeah.
So we can't really identify the earliest special feature because neither of us were around probably when it was. Yeah, and the definition is very loose. But once cassette rolled around, video cassette, right? Mm-hmm. They started doing this thing that you've already alluded to, where you would get a whole separate video cassette that had some kind of making of or special features mm-hmm. collection, right? Mm-hmm. That you could buy separate.
Yeah, totally.
And this
separate.
To me is like, it's such a weird concept now mm-hmm. to think that you would, like, it's the equivalent of if you bought a DVD that was just the special features.
Exactly.
Which I would do. But
I'm surprised that it hasn't gotten to that yet.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they're not
selling them separately.
Selling them individually.
Yeah.
But well, I think that probably speaks to the whole industry behind it, which is that in a lot of cases, the special features are there to make you buy the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that, and I don't think that the consumer public would stand for that, you know?
Oh, like that there, I have there's to buy some, two separate.
Yeah, because they're somewhat savvy in that you can, they know you can fit it all. Mm-hmm. Onto one or two DVDs and package it together now.
Right.
Like, you can't say that that's not possible.
Right, right.
In the days of cassette, you know, you couldn't put...
Look at this little DVD. How are we supposed to put a movie on this thing?
You try to put it
Look
on
Look at
there.
That. It fits in the palm of my hand.
You want me to put a feature-length film on here? And trailers? God, what if they start selling each special feature on its own disc?
Yeah.
The trailer disc. The commentary track, which is actually a CD.
It's actually like you know, those giant canisters that films used to come in. That's where you start carrying
the
Best Buy.
The commentary track is on a CD that you have to play while you watch the movie.
You have to sync it up like Dark Side of the Moon and Wizard of Oz.
No, but with cassettes, you could make the argument. You know, we can't fit everything onto the cassette. So
right. You have a finite amount of space.
Yeah. I mean, for what? For like a movie that was more than 2 hours, you needed two cassettes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, with special features, that made sense. That came on a whole other cassette. And it was, they were weird when you found them.
Yeah.
Weren't they? It was like, it seemed like a strange discovery.
And it was for the weirdest movies. I mean, like, sometimes you would get, like, big ones, like Star Wars or
Jurassic
Park
had a great
one.
The Ninja
one for
Turtles.
Back to the Future. Oh, yeah, yeah. Ninja
Turtles. I had the Ninja Turtles one, and I had the Jurassic Park one, and the Jurassic Park one is excellent, and it is, you know, it's a making of, and the coolest thing about it is that it's one of the earliest that I know of making of that has the CGI creature effects stuff in it. You know, Jurassic Park was one of the first movies that featured these CG-generated, computer-generated, these computer-generated creatures, the dinosaurs, right?
So it's the first time you actually have a computer on the screen. Somebody's sitting at a computer so they're showing stuff.
And they're showing these guys talking about what it was like to make these dinosaurs. And the awesome thing is, you know, they're animators. And so part of what they do is they'll act out and film themselves acting out whatever the creature's supposed to be doing to get an idea of movement or acting decisions. Mm-hmm. And so there's this awesome stuff on that cassette that shows these guys like run around a parking lot as if they're gallimimuses. Or like pretending to be velociraptors and stuff. And it's excellent, excellent stuff. And it actually made its way to the DVD set as well. So if you own the Jurassic Park DVD, take a look at this making of. It's not only is it cool because of what I just described, but it's also from the 90s.
Oh.
So like you get the era aspect of it, and everyone looks like they're living in the 90s.
Right. Everybody has like they've got like sweatshirts over collared shirts, and like lots of like hair and multiple
earrings.
There's
flannel. And,
yeah.
There's one guy, he's one of the animators, one of the computer animators, who has got some weird kind of surfer inflection, like he's from California, very stereotypically surfer like. And he's talking about animating the T-Rex, and specifically the scene where the T-Rex eats the lawyer, mm-hmm. pulls him out of that the bathroom or whatever.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen Jurassic Park, just don't listen.
There are dinosaurs. Shut up.
But he's talking about how... he's talking about the motion that the T-Rex does to pick up the lawyer and kill him. Mm-hmm. And he literally, as he's describing it, he acts it out for, you know, whoever's filming him. He's like, the T-Rex, he, you know, clamps down on the lawyer, and then he shakes his head to break all the bones in his body. And then it cuts away from it.
And the guys, like, behind the camera are just, like, staring.
I bet it's online. We should see if we can find it. Put it in the notes if we can. But, yeah, that was an excellent cassette. And I found that, you know, at a video store at one point and bought it. Mm-hmm. And the Ninja Turtles one is also very good. And they're like, you know, 30 to 45 minute, like you said, 30 to 45 minute documentaries that go into the making of, which is fascinating. I love that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the fact that they would make them, they would dedicate a whole cassette to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they clearly understood that there was an interest in it.
I wonder how they knew. Like, did they just throw one out and they were, let's see how it does?
Try it out, see how it goes. Well, there used to be... I think this is actually on the Gremlins DVD.
Yeah.
There was a reel of footage that was apparently shown at some like comic book convention or you know, sci-fi convention before the movie came out. And it's like Joe Dante, the director of Gremlins, on the set. And it's a little just stuff that was filmed, I guess. You almost feel like it's like stuff that's filmed for the producers or something.
Yeah.
To like show like, here's something you can say about this movie that's unique and say like, this is justification for why we're making this movie.
Yeah, know? I think part of it is sort of like, here's where your money's going.
Yeah, yeah. So that maybe that's sort of where it came from.
Yeah.
And then who knows like how it you know, broadened out from there. But like the fact that, okay, this is like 1982 or 1983 and they're showing this stuff at conventions.
Yeah.
So... I think maybe they saw that the same audience that was like coming back and watching these movies over and over mm-hmm. again, like, you know, okay, well, here's another way that we can like
get money from them.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least, you know, here's another way to market this movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I wonder if, you know, general sort of nerdiness is linked with that desire to know more about how it was made.
Oh, yeah.
The things that went into it,
oh,
you know?
Yeah, because
oftentimes I find it as entertaining, if not more entertaining, than the film or show itself.
Yeah. Oh, it can definitely go that way.
How it was created.
But not necessarily everyone has that opinion of it.
Yeah. I know.
So I think, yeah, it's definitely, hey, look, it appeals to a very specific mindset.
I know. You don't have to.
Yours. Your mindset.
I know.
Your very specific mindset.
I know. Drop it.
One of the challenges for us was to make this T-Rex bite and, you know, grab and bring into the air this real guy. So what we did was we replaced him. It's a real live guy at the head of the shot when he's doing like this. And then when the T-Rex chomps him, we switched to our computer graphics guy. And it gave us the flexibility to make the T-Rex take the most appropriate action, take the action that a real T-Rex would when he would yank him into the air and shake him to, like, break all the bones in his body so, you know, he can kill him and eat him.
But the first DVDs, they didn't know what to do with them, so they kind of followed the form of cassettes.
Well, I think initially, coming out of the Laserdisc thing,
yeah,
which we should talk about, like, the Laserdiscs, I think they originated in, like, the 70s.
Yeah.
But they didn't get really, and I say big in quotes, you know, because they never really got big.
Oh, they were big. They were size of records.
They were big.
Hey,
they could deflect bullets. But...
Trust me, folks. They were big.
But they didn't really have a presence until, I would say, like, the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, like, I don't think that they had... I don't think there was ever really a market for them until they started putting special features on them. Because, you know, I was too young to have the means to buy a Laserdisc or anything, but I would look at them, and if the disc didn't have special features, my thought was like, well, why wouldn't I just get a tape, you know?
Yeah.
What good is this? You know, I got to flip it over or whatever. But there were, like, the special editions of, like, Aliens and RoboCop and all these movies, like, you know, that of a very certain kind. You know, they appealed to, like, generally, like, male-centric, you know, action movie type things. That would have all these, you know, behind-the-scenes things.
Did you have a Laserdisc player?
No. I wanted one. I don't think I ever really came close to getting one.
Yeah.
But I did consider it for a long time. If I'd had the means, I probably would have gotten one.
My experience with Laserdisc is relegated to science class. My science teacher had one, and we would watch documentaries, like nature stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or science programs.
Yeah.
Made specifically for science classes. I think I saw The Powers of Ten on a Laserdisc.
The Eames documentary?
Yeah.
Nice.
Is that that's the one where they pull out?
It's the couple
and then they push
the
in.
Yeah.
Well, that's the crazy twist of that movie.
Yeah.
They pull out until they're at the, you know, in space. You think you're done. No, we're going to go into inner space.
Yeah.
We're going all the way back down to that dude's hand.
You go further.
Yeah, into the molecules.
Molecules.
But
science.
So I don't know a whole lot about, like, Laserdisc or the special features that came on them.
Well, they really did sort of form the basis for DVDs.
Okay.
And this is, well, you got to remember too, this is at a time where nobody bought movies really. Everybody rented them.
Was
so.
Criterion.
They started Laserdisc,
mm-hmm. So there you go.
And that's, actually, you could argue that they more or less defined what
special features.
The special feature
I'm going to look them up
is.
So we can talk about them.
Let's talk about Criterion.
But Laserdisc had a tough time.
They did.
And they were ahead of the curve in a way. So really, the DVD took its lead from Laserdisc, not from cassette.
It was domesticating the Laserdisc, because the part of the problem with the Laserdisc was, like, the cost. You would pay, like, $100-$120 for a special edition of a single movie.
It was unwieldy, too.
And they were gigantic.
A giant thing.
Yeah. So I think that was sort of the reason why they didn't catch on. So the DVDs, when they first came out, they were priced at, you know, $20-$30.
Yeah.
So they were targeted at people who wanted to buy movies.
And that was an interesting time when the DVDs started to come out, and you would go to a rental store. You had, like, they were really wary of...
Oh, yeah, they were.
There was one rack, you know, mm-hmm. of DVDs, and they were like, let's see how these do.
Mm-hmm.
And it exploded, man.
It did.
I mean, obviously. Huge. But DVD brought in and made popular, I would say, the idea of special features.
Absolutely.
So now we all...
Conversely, I think, or you know, in tandem with that, special features were what made DVDs.
Oh,
so
yeah, popular. Exactly.
And
yeah.
Explode.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they were like, we've got all this space, right? Mm-hmm. Like, part of the reason to have DVD is for high-quality picture, mm-hmm. right? But you can also fit so much data, so much more data
yeah.
on it than you can on a cassette. So we herald in the age of the DVD, digital versatile disc,
yeah.
or digital video disc.
Right.
Both are appropriate.
Layman's terms.
Lame. Yeah. If you're a lame man. If you want the lame man term.
Lame. Yeah.
So now we all have sort of a stock definition, I think, of what a special feature is, thanks mm-hmm. to the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So your standard special features that come on a DVD, not standard, but let's just say what you can expect to find.
Traditional.
Yeah, traditional.
Traditional. I mean, they are traditional. They've been around for like 15 years now, 20 years
yeah.
now. So.
So you've got trailers.
Trailers.
Which is generally disappointing.
Ubiquitous trailers.
It's sort of annoying that they even market it.
This podcast has been approved for general audiences by the Motion Picture Association.
Is that the trailer?
No. That's the little green screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For a trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We're on the same page now. You've got trailers. You usually have some kind of behind the scenes. Not usually, but a good DVD.
Frequently, yes.
And that... Just that category has a whole range of
mm-hmm.
Variations, right?
Yeah.
Of the featurette, which is could be anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
All mostly the way up
talking
to
heads,
yeah.
mostly just, you know, people saying, here's what we want to do with this movie.
Yeah.
This was interesting in this movie.
Yeah.
Can't wait to work with these people.
Doesn't actually have any behind the scenes footage.
Yeah.
It's just them talking and then sometimes laid over footage of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have all the way up to a feature-length
yeah.
documentary.
Yeah.
Right? The best... Well,
or a feature-length collection
of segments. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
dedicated one to the special
right.
feature. Or the
one to production, pre-production.
Yeah.
One to, yeah, the score.
Yeah.
Those are, that's...
The
that's
hairstylist.
Professional level special featuring.
Yeah.
If you ask me. So there's behind the... You've got some kind of behind-the-scenes thing. Outtakes.
Uh-huh.
It's always a good thing to have.
Uh-huh.
Deleted scenes. Sometimes they're really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can see exactly why they were deleted.
Frequently. More often than not.
Yeah. Usually deleted scenes are really boring.
Yeah.
And, what's worse than a deleted scene is an extended scene.
Which is just complete and utter nonsense.
Because it's usually not that much extended.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually... You're sitting there watching it like, okay, just show me the part I didn't see before.
Yeah.
And then when you see it, you're like, why did I watch this?
Yeah. And you took the time to load it,
yeah.
you know? Like, and then you're just waiting there,
yeah.
waiting, and it finally loads, and it's like 12 seconds.
You've got to make that decision. Do I watch? Do I play all?
Oh,
or do
yeah.
I watch them individually?
And then like the captions that are on
yeah.
the menu screen to represent them, you have to like try to interpret what exactly
yeah.
they mean. Man, who writes those? Like, who is sitting there watching these deleted scenes and thinking like, how do I tie
all
right.
this?
Oh,
this
yeah.
one is
old woman spits a mile long.
Cop enters scene. I don't know. And sometimes the deleted scenes have their own commentary tracks.
Yes.
So you can watch it.
They're so short.
You can watch the deleted scene with a commentary track or without. A lot of
that's
yeah.
That smacks of vanity to me.
I agree.
Yeah.
I
but
agree.
It's a nice segue because frequently another frequent special feature is an audio commentary,
which I think is one of the better.
Agree.
Of the special features.
I think it can be.
I think it's almost always worth watching. Even the bad ones. Because the, well,
if it's a movie that you already like, or it is a movie that has some greater depth behind the making of it, then, and if you have the right collection of people together, then
The thing is, I really find it interesting to get into the director's mind of what they were thinking, and even on a bad film, and maybe more so, to hear them sort of justifying choices they made or speaking as if the film is good. And there's two different types of commentary tracks as well. There's the commentary track where you have all the people in a room. They're watching the movie and they're talking about it. And then there are some commentary tracks where they've gotten the people separate from one another.
And they've cut them together. Their dialogue at appropriate parts.
And it can be done well and it can be done poorly. But either way, it's always somewhat jarring. Like, you have to get used to it because you're expecting them to play off of one another or talk to each other.
Yeah, you're almost expecting like a narrative,
a conversation.
That. Yeah, yeah.
And with the one with the commentary that's cut apart, it's a weird dynamic because it's all these people talking about the same thing but not talking to each other. They're talking to, you know, you essentially, right? I mean, they're talking to just the listener. Which is it's a strange.
Yeah, it's almost like they called you up.
But, yeah,
like,
but they keep calling you. Like first the director calls you. He's like, "We shot this in Costa Rica."
Right.
And then the lead actor calls you. You know, in this scene, I had to talk to a tennis ball.
That belt that did not fit.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the director calls you back.
What is this me, Arnold Schwarzenegger? And is this me on the screen here, riding towards the camera? Here, this is my job. I'm a construction worker. And I'm totally amazed. I'm looking at the gun.
Yeah, so this is really this.
Exactly. How did I do that? Here's the great fight scene with Sharon and me. Ow. That hurt. I continuously used him as a human shield, and then I threw him down. The escalator. And now he just got the message that he should actually put a wet towel around his
head.
Which
is also, like, crazy.
Exactly, yeah. So that they so they cannot detect of where I am. I run around like an Indian. That's a funny scene. She's trying to steal the suitcase. Now they have problems following it.
Let's talk about Criterion.
Criterion.
I've called up the Wikipedia page.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So
they originated in New York or Michigan or something like that?
New York is the headquarters.
Okay.
So they founded in 84.
84.
And I'm reading from the Wikipedia page. Okay. If you want to follow along. If you want to follow along.
Yeah, read along.
Go find, search the Criterion Collection on Wikipedia. And yeah, just, you know, read along with me. I'm starting I'm starting at the top. Stop it. The Criterion Collection, established 1984, is a video distribution company selling important classic and contemporary films, that was in quotes, to film aficionados. The Criterion series is noted for helping to standardize the letterbox format for home video. No one calls it letterbox anymore.
That's way better than widescreen, though, when you think about it.
It's more...
Widescreen seems so, like,
what is letterbox? Like, why is it? But why is it called letterbox?
I don't remember the exact definition. We should look this up. But it has something to do with the way in which like movies were.
I could click the letterbox link right now.
Yeah, you could do it. Well, tell us what the letterbox is.
Well, let's continue this.
Okay.
The Criterion series is noted for helping to standardize the letterbox format for home video, bonus features, and special editions. Criterion is also known for taking great lengths to restore and clean all films released on their label. Founded in 84. Let's see here. No. Ignore this. Cut this out.
Boom!
So these are the contributions and influence. So this is what they're what is attributed to them.
Oh, yeah, what they have.
So letterboxing. With its 8th Laserdisc release of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Criterion introduced the letterbox format.
With its 8th?
Its 8th Laserdisc release.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't its 8th release of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They just keep putting it out. People keep buying it.
Commentary tracks. The Criterion Collection's 2nd catalog title, King Kong, was the debut of the scene-specific audio commentary contained in a discrete analog channel of the Laserdisc. It featured U.S. film historian Ronald Haver reporting about the production, cast, screenplay, production design, and special effects. special editions. Criterion Collection began in 1984 with the releases of Citizen Kane and King Kong on Laserdisc. The company later became notable for pioneering the special edition DVD concept, containing bonus materials, trailers, commentaries, documentaries, alternate endings, which we didn't talk about, deleted scenes, etc. A film school in a box, as it were, the success of which established the special edition version in the DVD business.
How about that?
So there you go, Criterion. We owe them a lot.
Yeah. Damn straight.
We didn't even talk about alternative endings.
No.
I think one of the most interesting Clerks has the alternative ending where Dante, spoiler, if you haven't seen this alternative ending that isn't the actual film, it doesn't actually end like this. But the in the alternate ending of Clerks, Dante gets shot at the end.
Yeah.
Which is an extremely grim ending.
Yeah.
And thankfully that was removed. Film restoration, they're known for licensing, which is kind of boring. So yeah, there you go, Criterion, man. If it weren't for them, I don't know if we'd really have the special features in the way that we know them, right?
No. You could argue that we wouldn't.
We probably would eventually.
Maybe.
Favorite special features.
Favorite special features. Now, we're talking not a type of special feature, but
a specific special feature. So, these are almost our recommendations.
Yeah, you could say if you're going to seek out a DVD specifically for a special
feature.
We're
going to give you some ideas of where there are some good ones to be had.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, we are.
So, one of my favorites, and I think you'll agree with me here, and it's better than the film itself, is the feature-length documentary of Star Wars Phantom Menace. Right?
Right. Well, I mean, when your Taco Bell toys are better than the actual film,
it's a really good... I mean, it follows the production all the way through, and it's amazing. Yeah. What is amazing about this documentary is if you are of the opinion, and a lot of people are, that The Phantom Menace is a bad movie... Mm-hmm. And especially a bad Star Wars movie. It's fascinating.
I've heard that opinion expressed.
It's fascinating to watch George Lucas make this movie. and everyone, and especially because the movie, obviously they're making it, hasn't come out yet.
Right.
And so no one knows.
No one in the outside world
knows about it. And no one making this film... They're all under the assumption it's going to be great.
Right.
And why wouldn't they be, right? It's Star Wars. It's coming back. And so, like, everyone is upbeat and excited, and, like, they're walking through the sets and the props and stuff and showing all these things. There's the infamous moment where George Lucas brings Spielberg onto the set, and he's showing him the props. He's like, and these are the robots, and... these droids are going to be the main bad guys in the movie. And then Spielberg's like, oh, hey, is that Yoda?
He knows. Like, nobody else is willing to admit or even acknowledge that maybe this isn't a good idea. But Spielberg, like, instantly he's looking at it, he's like, this is terrible.
He can see the track that George Lucas is heading down, and he's just like, oh my gosh. And he's like looking around for something to latch onto that is good, and he sees the Yoda puppet, and he's like, oh
yeah,
is that Yoda?
The Spielberg thing highlights something important, and this actually leads into one of my favorite special features, there are, it's not so much necessarily the feature itself that I love so much in a lot of cases, but it's like a specific moment where there's like a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. It's where, you know, suddenly this movie takes on a new meaning because of something that's in this special feature.
Yeah.
Like, and the one that immediately jumps to mind, it's another Spielberg movie, and it's in the documentary on the 25th anniversary of Jaws.
Okay.
The DVD of Jaws. And, this was like the first behind the scenes thing of Jaws I'd ever seen.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, a retrospective. So it's people now talking about making the movie, and they're talking about how the shark never worked. Like,
it was
like just notoriously not like days. They would go days without being able to film because the shark wasn't working.
Right.
And Richard Dreyfuss, they're interviewing this cantankerous old man that was once Dr. Hooper. And he's talking about how they had this PA system set up on the island where they were filming on Martha's Vineyard. And, every day, you would hear like a status report about the shark, and so you knew like to go back he's doing his impression of this, and he's like, the shark is not working. The shark is not working.
A lot of times we put the shark in the water and it wouldn't move.
We would have to get in and re-weld it, repatch it, re-bolt it, rebuild it, whatever.
And one night Spielberg's pal snuck in and did some damage too.
George Lucas crawled in, you know, the jaw. Well, Steven was trying to work the thing. George was crawling in to see how the hydraulics worked. So I think he tried to close the jaws on George or something like that. And the shark broke. And we all ran away like bad little kids.
It kept failing and failing and failing and failing.
All over the island through the radio mics, you could hear,
the shark is not working. The shark is not working.
The pressure kept mounting.
Such a strange characterization for that movie. You know, you don't like when you see that movie when you're grown up and mm-hmm. you watch it in sort of the vacuum of the movie itself. You know, you cannot even conceive of the dimensions involved in making it, and then to hear, you know, such a workmanlike experience.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, you can't get something done because something else doesn't work. You know, it's just it's so enlightening.
Another one of my favorites, and this is just, I take this as a whole, is the entire Lord of the Rings extended edition DVD sets that have
precedent right there.
Yeah, it's so the special features alone, there's about 3 hours per movie of content, and they follow all the way from it's making of documentary that goes from Tolkien, like there's a documentary about J.R.R. Tolkien and sort of him writing the books, that then there's
there
a
books?
Huh?
There were books.
Oh, John. then they talk about turning the book into a script, and then they talk about the production design, the pre-production, the concept design, all the stuff they did before they actually start filming. Then there's stuff about filming, you know, and it's like three movies of making of, because they talk about pre-production, production, and then post-production, where they go into the special effects and music and sound. And it's if you are interested in film, you know, if you are at all interested in how a movie is made and what goes into it, I highly recommend getting your hands on it, because even if you're not interested in Lord of the Rings, it's a really cool look into how movies are made.
Filmmaking in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like context.
Okay.
So as far as special features go, the things that I find most appealing are sort of they provide context for the movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that means either they provide additional details about the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in the case of like a something that's based on real events, and they give you additional framework for it. And the one specific instance that I can think of, where I was totally blown away. And it's since, you know, looking back on it now, it's the kind of thing where it's one of those everybody has seen it at this point kind of things. But when Criterion put out the Sid and Nancy special edition DVD, mm-hmm. Which is the it's a Gary Oldman movie. Yeah. He plays Sid Vicious from the Sex Pistols. And there is there's this notorious moment. I don't even think it's actually captured in the film. They don't even do a version of it in the film, if I remember. But there was this appearance on a primetime TV talk show that the real Sex Pistols made back in 1976 or something. I think it was Bill Grundy's show.
Okay.
He brings on a guest and he sort of playfully chides them, whatever. And I've heard stories about this guy, you know, maybe he was kind of just a jerk in general or whatever, but you know, it's that kind of rapport. And so here he is on the show and he's surrounded by, he's got the Sex Pistols in chairs in front of him. And there's all these like, you know, punk kids behind him.
Oh man.
And he just, and there've been stories told about this incident, like the things leading up to it. Like he was drunk, they were drunk. They just sort of seem disinterested in the conversation. And so he's disinterested in the conversation. And so he's starting to just like provoke them. And eventually Johnny Rotten just sort of like, and Steve, I think, the guitarist, they just start like throwing out, swears and stuff. And they're on live television. Yeah. You know? So that segment, that piece of like TV history, was not the kind of thing like that was readily available at before the internet or DVDs, you know?
Yeah.
So, I watched Sid and Nancy for the first time on the Criterion DVD and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, this is cool or whatever. And I'm going through the special features and suddenly everything seems to take on so much more meaning and it has such a greater relevance just because of watching that clip. And it was like, that was like the perfect bridge between what I had seen in the movie and wanting to know more about the Sex Pistols or, you know, and the context in which they came out of, you know, so that it like really grounded that story, you know, made the translation, you know, really solid between those two.
Man. Another one of my favorites is on the Mallrats DVD, the commentary. Yeah. The commentary is as funny as the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's you know, it's like Kevin Smith, Ben Affleck, Scott Mosier, Jason Lee, I think Jason Mewes.
Who doesn't he like fall asleep halfway through the movie?
That's the Clerks one. Okay, he's drunk on the Clerks commentary. Yeah, yeah. The first Clerks commentary. Yeah. That one I found pretty boring.
Yeah,
unfortunately. But the Mallrats commentary is just Ben Affleck is surprisingly hilarious on it intentionally.
Yeah.
But they're all really good. It's a really entertaining commentary track.
I think my favorite commentary, I'm sure I've heard ones that I like as good, as much as I like this one, or maybe even better, but the one that I always come back to is Evil Dead 2.
I've never heard that one.
Which is, it's Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell, Ted Raimi, who is a producer and brother of Sam Raimi, and then the effects crew from KNB, which is, I can't even remember them now, but that was sort of like their big debut, as an effects group. The exchanges between them, there's like they just smart ass each other throughout the whole thing. The entire 90-minute run, they're just making fun of each other.
Excellent.
And chiding each other.
Oh, man, I'm going to check
You get
that
such
out.
A great sense of, like, them as a group, their friendship, you know, just from that commentary.
Well, that's a lot like the Mallrats. Yeah. You can tell they're friends.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so enjoyable.
Yeah.
Well, special features.
Yeah.
Let's put it in the archive.
Yeah. Ooh, should we record an alternate ending?
Oh. going to say, let's put it in the archive.
Okay, yeah. Let's put it in the archive.
And then you should say, no. And then we'll drop in a gunshot.
I like it. Yeah. Ready? Yeah.
So, special features.
Special. They're
extended. They're
bonus.
Deluxe.
Yeah.
They're directorially cut.
Yeah.
Let's put it in the archive.
Let's put it in the archive.